Welcome to Out of Bounds. I'm Tish Perlman. My guest is Janet Bates. Bates's life has taken her in many fascinating directions. She began her career in the nursing field, went on to become a physician, and has been a family practitioner since 1990. In 2003, as the Iraq War was about to begin, she found herself turning her anger and depression about this issue into social and peace activism. It was at this point that she also began writing songs for the first time. Earlier this year, while working on her fifth CD called Little Spinner, she was diagnosed with cancer. While undergoing chemotherapy at the behest of friends and fans, she started a popular blog where she discusses both her personal journey as well as offering medical information. I'm talking to Janet Bates by phone from her home in Oregon. Janet Bates, thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah. Now, can you tell us a bit about your earlier years and your interest in pursuing a medical career?
Well, I was initially a nurse for 10 years, and I worked as an intensive care nurse. I had this idea, though, that by finally seeing how doctors worked, I just thought it seemed so much more interesting to me. So at first I thought I could just do it because it seemed easy from a distance. But then I decided to go to medical school and found that it was a little more complicated than I thought. But
I'll bet.
But after being in the career of nursing for 10 years, I just wanted to go further, deeper. I wanted to be the one that was doing the calculations and evaluations and decisions. And
Yeah, you wanted to be the one in charge, I assume. Yeah, I can understand that. Now, it was in 2003 when you began to awaken as an activist. To tell us what prompted this.
Well, I've been following the story after September the 11th. I remember reading soon after September the 11th on a newspaper, there was a picture of George Bush and a great big sign. It said, Iraq? Question mark. And it stayed with me because everybody thought, Iraq? You know, it was kind of crazy at that time. And then I watched and saw how things changed, and suddenly they turned, and you could just, for the first time ever, I could actually just see where they were going, and it seemed to me it should be obvious to everyone. And so early, it was actually the very first rally I attended was a Martin Luther King Day, and I just picked up a flyer, and I saw his Riverside speech. It said, there comes a time when silence is betrayal, and I thought, that was me. I was just thinking all this stuff, and I was doing nothing. So I went back to Bandon, the town I live in, and started organizing a rally. And I actually assumed that who would I have? I didn't even really know anybody. How do you start a rally? So I just assumed that all doctors and nurses would be against the war because the only people that could be for it, I thought, in my very naivety, would be people who were really foolish, poorly educated, or people who were very mean-spirited. And that was my very naive thinking at the time. I guess I hadn't been in the United States long enough to realize, you know, how everything, the rhetoric. And I also didn't have a television, so I just didn't quite understand the depth of people's beliefs.
I think a lot of people were taken by surprise. But by how people were digging in at that point.
Yeah. I just thought, well, every time I heard Bush speak, I could tell he was lying. And I just assumed that everyone else could.
And so that was the first time you ever really tapped into the idea of becoming an activist and making a difference just as a lone voice, huh?
Yeah, basically. Maybe in that level, I guess.
And so you also began writing songs at that time. You said that you were depressed, and your husband suggested that you write a song about it. Tell us about that.
Well, the first day of the war, I guess I was still convinced that it wouldn't happen. It just was just so crazy, and it was just so devastating that first day. Because we'd had several rallies, and we'd really done a lot of things, and everyone had. There'd been that huge international, 15 million people out. I just couldn't imagine it happening. So, yeah, the first day of the war, my husband said, well, why don't you try to write a song? And he said, how do you write a song? He said, well, you know, you just sort of put some words together that rhyme, and then you sort of... And I don't know. I just started writing, and I really had never even written poetry.
Yeah, that's what it said in your biography. This is fascinating.
I joined with a lot of people who were quite musical, but because I knew so little about music, I would follow different, you know, patterns in writing the songs that you know, sometimes at first they'd say, but you can't do that. And it seemed to work. So I just really did things in what I call an intuitive way.
Uh-huh. And you must have been a musician at that point. You were doing cover songs, right?
I just basically, all I really did musically was play for a once-a-year campground sing-song.
Really?
Yeah. Well, I had played music. I play guitar and sing, but I'd never really done much except in high school. I had sort of played in coffee houses, and I was in a competition in Canada and made it to Canada Week Search for Talent, and I played at a big event in Vancouver. But I guess I never pursued a music career at that time because I didn't have my own songs, and I had this idea that you couldn't really. I assumed that everybody wrote their own songs
mm-hmm.
at the time, and I didn't know much about that.
Uh-huh. Well, yeah, I mean, a lot of the good musicians do, mainly because they want their voice to be heard in their own way and not, you know, just imitate what other people are thinking.
Right.
Yeah. But well, you call your music stealth activism, and you certainly have been busy writing in the last 5 or 6 years. Tell us what you mean by stealth activism.
Well, I guess what I tried to do with the music, I mean, I realized that there was a lot of people who really didn't know what was going on. And sometimes if the story was given to them by somebody they trusted, I mean, I'm a physician here, and I think people trust my judgment on things until they saw that I was against the war. But they would listen to the words, and if you made it a pretty song with a pretty voice, then after they're humming it, then they realize what it's saying.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess that's basically what I tried to do through the songs. I wrote songs with stories, like I wrote about the three nuns that went to prison, you know, the ones who were trying to show that there was a nuclear weapon, illegal nuclear weapon in them. And it's just trying to point out events that were happening, but just present them from a very basic level, as opposed to how they were being presented in the news,
mm-hmm,
with a twist or whatever.
Yeah.
And then try to build them around a person.
Well, that's the tradition of folk music anyway. You know, it's kind of a gentle weapon.
Yes.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
A soft hit on the head.
You also went to Camp Casey with Cindy Sheehan. Tell us a little bit about that experience.
Well, actually, I went towards the end. I had written a song called the Mother's Day Song, and it was actually not about Cindy Sheehan. It was about a friend of mine whose son had been in Iraq and had come back. But I had asked her about what it was like when you saw three Marines killed, and she had this whole means of sorting out how it wasn't him. You know, she'd work it all out very quickly, but then she'd always feel badly because it meant there was three other mothers that were...
Mm.
So I wrote a song about that, and it was soon after I wrote that song that that Cindy Sheehan started her thing down there. And there was a lot about the song that seemed to be about her. And so Tom Hartman had me on his show a few times with that, and then really everyone suggested I should just go there. And so I thought, what the heck?
Mm-hmm.
So I went down there towards the end. I was actually the camp doctor for the final few days, and oddly enough, I was there when Katrina hit. And it was interesting because the day after the Katrina, I was told on a bus the night before that there was going to be a storm hit New Orleans that was going to destroy this ancient city. And I thought, wow, talk about exaggeration.
Yeah.
Next morning, you know, it hadn't really hit the city, but Cindy gave a press conference that she was going to send the buses that were going to go originally all over the country. She was going to load one of them full of all of the supplies from Camp Casey and send that to Louisiana. And then on the flight home a few days later, I saw from the airport that the levees had broken and the city was starting to flood.
Mm.
And interestingly enough, her buses made it there before the government.
God, that's not surprising at this point, is it?
Yeah.
Well, Janet, I do want to play an excerpt from Little Spinner, your current CD, and I want to play a cut called Time to Go.
Okay.
To tell us a tiny bit about it before we play it.
Okay, well, that song was written right in the midst of all my protesting, and I was receiving death threats, and people found I was Canadian, and I was protesting, and so I decided at that time that I was in a strange land, and it was time to go home to Canada.
Uh-huh. Well, let's listen to a little bit of it.
Okay.
it whenever the wind blows. I feel it deep in my soul. I feel it when the night is upon me. It's time for me to go. A stranger here, it's time for me to go.
You know what? That's a very haunting song. Now let's talk a little bit about the fact that you are from Canada and you have adopted the U.S. as your new country. Is that the case?
Yeah, we're from Canada. We came here because we wanted to live by the ocean. And in British Columbia, there's really no ocean. It's pretty rugged there. So that was our original reason for coming. And then actually probably a lot of the reason we stayed after all of this was we formed such an incredibly close group of friends. I mean, when you really take on an issue like this, the friends that you make are probably better than any friends you've ever had because they're, you know, they're people who are willing to go the distance for people that they don't even know.
Mm-hmm.
Protesters of war really are. They're not necessarily doing it for themselves.
So that's the reason why you stayed, huh?
Yeah.
I want to talk about this, too. Earlier this year, you were diagnosed with cancer. Can you talk to us a little bit about that, how that changed your life?
Well, in February, I guess I'd had some what most people would think of as menopausal symptoms, vaginal bleeding and that sort of thing. I'd sort of put it off for a little while. I had an endometrial biopsy in February and was diagnosed with endometrial cancer. And then I had the surgery a few weeks later, and it was very surprisingly found that it had spread to the lymph nodes, so that made it advanced. So I went chemotherapy and radiation after that. It was quite an experience, I have to say. It's been quite a year for us, but I guess the thing about this, you go through a lot of stages that are some of them pretty ugly. I was really quite depressed for quite a while. And then I think as time goes on and the therapy goes on, and I think your mind goes through stages, stages of grief. And then you do start to, I guess, accept what you have. And, so now I've completed all the treatments and I feel good about my prognosis, and it's been a hard time.
Oh, I'll bet.
I don't know what else specifically.
If you're just joining us, my guest is Janet Bates. She's a singer-songwriter, a physician, and a cancer survivor, and we're talking about her cancer. Now physicians are notoriously known as really bad patients. Was this a huge turnaround for you to have to become a patient suddenly?
Oh, yes, yes. It was really huge. In fact, I think that that was part of the hard part is that I needed to know all of the details. Most physicians that I don't think know a lot about oncology
mm-hmm.
because it's such a specialized area, and I clearly am one of those. There was so much of it I didn't know, and so I became obsessed with finding the answers, and I had to know what exactly is my prognosis. I
mm-hmm.
And I think, you know, I really didn't, none of the doctors can give you that answer, and really, so yeah, I was a horrible patient, really.
Yeah, well, I think a lot of doctors find patients horrible when they do want to know too much.
Yeah, well,
you know?
Yeah, and I find as a physician, I have to figure out which ones are which, because there are some people who really don't, you know, I mean, I think there's sometimes they don't want to know too much. They mm-hmm. want to know, and then there's others who want to know a lot, and sometimes as a physician, you have to figure out which ones are which.
Yeah.
Sometimes you can horrify people, and sometimes you can, you know, they'll be left wondering more details.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Now, you started a blog as a result of this cancer diagnosis. To tell us about that. Has that changed you as a writer as well?
Well, I started it more just because I had so many friends and family who wanted to know, and I didn't want to repeat myself, and I was kind of uncomfortable, and I know people are uncomfortable asking you how you're doing.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So I just wrote it out daily for quite a while, just telling people what was going on, but I also felt that because I am a doctor, I was understanding what was happening to me, and I couldn't explain it without explaining the medical parts to it.
Mm-hmm.
So it very quickly became sort of a medical education thing, and because I really wanted to make sure that other women didn't make some of the same mistakes that I made. I wanted to make sure that anything that had happened with me, that people understood and were more aggressive about following up with PAPs and that sort of thing. So I tried to make it a medical education thing as well. And so I had a lot of people telling me that they would check in every morning for whatever they were going to learn. So I really got to the point where any little thing that was happening, I would then delve into it on the medical side. So, because right now I feel like with the American healthcare system, it's really not accessible for people at all. And I thought, the more people understand themselves, the more armed they are for this very difficult system. And even as a healthcare provider, it's a very difficult system to mm-hmm. access sometimes.
Yeah, I know. I think all of us have noticed that, and hopefully something good is going to come out of this current debate in the political realm. Now have you written any songs yet about your experience with cancer?
You know, I haven't. I haven't actually written a song in a year. Mm-hmm. I wrote so many songs, and I've been trying to evaluate it. Why? Because I just seem to write, I probably have several hundred songs from a brief period, having had 5 CDs out now.
Mm-hmm.
But I just think that it's just not the place. I think songwriting is, to me, is sort of this gift. I just get these little gifts in every now and then, and maybe I'm just not in the place for that right now.
Now, before we do run out of time, I want to play another cut from Little Spinner, and this one is called Let the Rich Man Pay. Can you tell us a little bit about that? This is a very political one.
Yeah, actually, that's a song that's probably the last official song that I've written. And I guess I was just, it was probably one of the fastest songs I'd ever written. I was just thinking about how it seems as though in our society somehow the poor do have to pay. You know, it's the tax laws. It just seems to protect corporations. The giving, you know, as far as charity, you know, often the people that are most often asked to give in charity are clearly not the rich,
mm-hmm.
it seems. But even in the biggest sort of way, the military, it's clearly not the rich that are there. So those were the points that I made. The various mm-hmm. verses were about those. And then,
yeah. Well, let's listen to this song. We're going to play the whole thing.
There's a man at the door collecting taxes. Tell that man that I already pay. Can't he leave a poor man rich man pay for a change. There's a man from the Salvation Army. Tell that man that I already gave. Can't he leave a poor man a few dollars? Let that rich man give for a change. A recruiter looks for your daughter. But a son I already gave. Can't he leave a poor man a few children? Let that rich man give for a change. There's a man out there selling salvation. Tell that man that I'm not going to pay. When a rich man comes selling heaven, I don't want to go anyway.
That's very powerful. It says on your current CD that you actually recorded this while you were undergoing chemo. Your
yes.
voice sounds gorgeous.
Oh, thank you. Sometimes, in some ways, everybody tells me that since all this has happened, my voice is improved a lot. I mean, I started into all this without any real education in vocals, and somehow with this cancer and everything, I seem to have gotten to a level of, I don't know, maybe relaxation or something. But I think all the songs were recorded, yeah, during chemo. It was quite a struggle.
I'm amazed that you had the strength for that.
Yeah, or the breath, really.
Yeah, I
was often short of breath. To hold long notes and that kind of stuff. It's just I didn't have the real lungs, it seems,
mm-hmm,
but that's
mm-hmm.
all gotten better.
Yeah, well, I'll bet staying in the creative realm helped you through this.
It did. In fact, I think that was, I at one point, I was going to quit. The CD, you know, had been started, and I'd been working on it, and I just thought, I just can't do this. And then I thought, well, this could be one positive thing that's going on in my life. So I decided to stick with it and to give me something positive each day.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. How do you juggle being a physician and a singer, songwriter, performer? I mean, do you think you'll ever reach a point where you're either going to have to do one or the other?
Well, that's the situation I'm at. I'm the kind of person that tends to put myself 100% into one direction or another, and sometimes I realize that I am going to have to make that choice, and my husband performs with me. We,
mm-hmm.
And I think that ultimately, at some point, we would like to just do the music. And I think that, in some ways, the songwriting goes better when you're not doing another whole job.
Mm-hmm.
So,
mm-hmm.
we look possibly in the next 2 or 3 years, just sort of going to more just the music and spending a period of our lives not as doctors.
Oh, he's a doctor as well, huh?
He is, yes. And it's, you know, it's a bit, although I think we both love what we do, we also love the music. And like you say, it's hard to do both well.
Yeah, yeah, I'll bet it is. Because, yeah, I mean, it takes so much focus to do both, it seems
yeah.
to me, especially being a writer and a performer, too, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, what kind of issues are you writing about now? You must be concerned about the war in Afghanistan being accelerated.
I am. I clearly am worried about that. In fact, I have my two sons home for Christmas from Canada, actually, and they each have classmates that are from when they were in high school going off to Afghanistan. So it
wow.
really hits a personal level to see kids that you've watched grow up now going off doing that.
Yeah.
Really sad.
Yeah, yeah. Well, what other issues are you concerned about? Environmental issues, I understand as well, huh?
Oh, clearly. And right now, I guess the thing that we're, you know, is the healthcare system. I mean, I worry. I see every day deterioration. I see people who, because they don't have healthcare, are not getting treatment. One thing I'd like to do is start a concert series where a group of cancer survivors like myself and our violin player perhaps do concert series more to raise money for people who otherwise wouldn't get cancer treatment, which there are people who. Locally we have, when something like that happens, they have all these fundraising events to help people with the cost.
Mm-hmm.
It would be nice to have a fund available for people like that.
Yeah. Now, as a physician who's from Canada, are you speaking out about the health care issue? Is the system in Canada something that we might take some parts of and imitate?
Oh, yes. Personally, I think, I guess I haven't been doing a lot of activism since I've been ill,
mm-hmm.
so I have to say. But I do remind people all the time that whatever they think of the Canadian healthcare system here is completely wrong.
Yeah.
I mean, it's there are some issues there, too. But I think that of the two, clearly the Canadian system, at least people have coverage. And I think that most of what the people are told here about the Canadian system is really untrue. My sister and I had a very similar operation at the same time, you know, within a month of each other, and she had very timely surgery. She had, the full care that I had. I had a $10,000 bill at the end, and she had nothing.
Mm.
It wasn't, being as I'm a physician, that wasn't the end of the world for me, but it certainly would be for a lot of people. And then, you know, my chemo and radiation bill right now is, through my insurance, is at $100,000 right now.
Wow.
That's probably one of the areas that I guess I'm most interested in, because it's the part that I see the most.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So what's next for Janet Bates? You've reached a year cancer-free. Are you going to start writing again and performing?
Yes. In fact, we're sort of, we played last week in Eugene, and we're booked to do some events for Earth Day. And, we're I guess we haven't really started yet, but we're looking at trying to get, we actually had a big tour arranged out to Ohio when all this happened. We were going to go this fall.
Mm.
So I think we're going to get back to some of those kinds of things, take some longer trips and,
can continue performing.
Once I'm sure that everything's okay. And I've just recently gotten my blood count back to normal. So it took about 4 months for it to come back up. So.
Wow, that's great, Janet. That is such great news. Now, we only have about a minute left. Can you give some contact information, how people can get in touch with you, can read your blog?
Well, the blog is janetbates.blogspot.com,
mm-hmm.
and my website is janetbates.com, and my email is janet@janetbates.com.
That's great. Well, I hope people will get in touch with you. And everybody, go out and buy some of Janet Bates' CDs. She's got a gorgeous voice. Her writing is just absolutely amazing. It's traditional folk sounding, and it's also very modern. So, Janet Bates, good luck to you, and we wish you well.
Well, thank you very much for having me.
Our audio producer is Nate Richardson at Rep Studio in Ithaca, New York. If you'd like to make a tax-deductible donation in support of the Out of Bounds radio show, please contact our fiscal sponsor, the Arts of the Southern Finger Lakes, at earts.org. That's earts.org. Our theme music was composed by Diego Vega. And visit us online at outofboundsradioshow.com. We'll be back next week. I'm Tish Perlman.